हरि
ओम सहनौ भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Guys are coming over just for today, or just for today, or regular thing?
No, they come and do that.
Okay, the two of you.
Yeah, on the second meeting.
Okay. We are on the bottom of page 47. When we say bottom, we literally mean bottom. They used to open this, right? Yeah, no, but I'm just, it's easier to work with also. Okay. Okay. So 197, verse. We, scriptures, are always accepted as authoritative. Our words and the words and behavior of great souls are standard evidence in all circumstances. And so this is an important aspect because this is the point when we introduce modern concepts into Krishna consciousness, they come based on opposition to this point. That the Vedas, the knowledge of the Vedas, the instructions of the acharyas are all time bound, that they are bound by a certain time and space, therefore they don't apply. We have to make adjustments, we have to change them, right? Because whatever is happening now, that's reality, right? So here is pointing out that this is spoken by the scriptures themselves. Right, so the scriptures personified. So these are, you know, residents of Brahmaloka. So they're not under illusion. They're not suffering from the material modes of nature. Right? They're beyond this. So, when they speak this, then they mean it because they're working on the universal platform. They're not on a specific planet that's governed by a specific time. They're on Brahmaloka, which means eternal time. You know, I mean, eternally universal time, right? So that's actually what should be in that little room with the telescope. It should actually have the time what's going on Brahmaloka if they wanted universal time. Yeah. So
for us, the clock would be going very slowly.
We're still on the same second as Einstein. So actually, in that case, in the age of Aquarius would be very close, right?
Is this true?
Okay, so then it comes. In the opinion of some transcendentalists, the absolute truth, eternally, one without a second, becomes differentiated only by the superficial covering of illusion, which makes the one absolute falsely appear as many jivas. And when, by knowledge of reality, that false this is stripped away, only the absolute truth remains manifest alone, right? So this is one aspect of Mayavada philosophy, right? Because they're saying is that you create the differentiation, that's the only thing that's happening there, but it's not real, it's illusory, because there is only the one absolute truth. So any variety that you see is illusion, because it doesn't exist, right? So this is their idea. It's you could say is that they're very intelligent, in that they understand that the material world has that aspect of illusion to it. But where they're not so intelligent is they actually don't understand where the aspect of illusion arises. It doesn't arise because there's variety and there's form. It arises because we don't see it in connection with the Supreme. So the problem is even though they're claiming it's connecting to the Supreme, technically they're not. Because Brahmavadis won't say this. We have to understand whenever you get this kind of philosophy, it is Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. Right? Which means it's Buddhism. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's atheistic. Because a Brahmavadi will say everything is Brahman. Right? So if everything is Brahman, all the variety is Brahman also. It's just varieties of Brahman. So when we don't accept the material manifestation as real, then that means we're not accepting the Lord's energy. And then not accepting the Lord's energy, you're not accepting the Lord as complete. And not accepting the Lord as complete, that's atheism. Therefore, we classify the Mayavadis as atheists. Right? Does that make sense? Brahmavadis then will say they are impersonalists. We don't say they're atheists. There's a difference. So the Vedic philosophy, the actual Vedic philosophy, is all agnostic. Right? You only get Gnostic with Buddhism. When you give up the Vedas, then you get the Gnostic philosophy. Right? Does this make sense?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
So,
yes.
Brahmavadi, he does not speak about illusion.
No, because technically there is no illusion. It's an illusion to think that there is. You know, in other words, the illusion is the illusion itself. You know what I'm saying? So a person's in illusion, that's the illusion. But everything around him is not illusion, it's all real.
Yes.
But his view of it is illusion. You understand? So we'll say the same thing. But the point is because we're dealing with the personal, then there's a reason for the illusion. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise, for the Brahmavadis, technically, what's the reason for illusion? You know what I'm saying? Because it's all Brahman. And so, but why would there be illusion? How would that come about? So, they can't answer it fully. Right? You know, those who deal with Paramatma can answer a touch more. Mm-hmm. But actually, only who deal with Bhagavan can actually answer it because it's the Lord's will. Mm-hmm. And why is that? He's only fulfilling the will of the jivas who want to be separate. Right? That's us. Right? And so that's what he's doing. It comes from there. Right? So they can't answer these things. They can give partial. So that's the problem with all the Vedic philosophies, is it's not that they're wrong. They're all correct, but they're incomplete. So their wrongness is their incompleteness. So any place that would be practically not viable is because of the lack of this completeness. You complete it, it works. Because otherwise, we accept nyaya. We use nyaya. That's in Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, unless something's presented with this point of logic, it's not actually appropriate discussions amongst intelligent people. Right? Then the atomic theory that everything's coming from the atoms and all that, and everything will go back to the atoms, we accept that. But the point is it's about the atoms being there is what we're going to work with. And getting rid of the atoms, it's getting rid of the concept that they're separate from the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Shankya, then that's third canto. We just studied that for 1 year. So that's accepted. Yoga systems, Bhakti Yoga is the highest of the yoga systems. Right? Does that make sense? And then when you're dealing with how you say, the Vedas with karma and all that, we use those things, but in Krishna's service. So it becomes karma yoga. Right? Does that make sense? So that way there's nothing that's not part of our philosophy. The problem is because it doesn't accept the personality of Godhead. Therefore, it's incomplete. That's where it fails. So because of that incompleteness, there's something in Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana that's not full. So you can't use it to advantage. You can't get out of the material world with any of these philosophies. Even Shankara, he's quoting philosophy, but because it's not complete, it won't get you out of the material world. Does that make sense? So in other words, technically, Maya bodies never get liberated. Because they're always trying to understand if they are. Because if you are, you know. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. Yeah. Yes?
Then what's Brahma-jyoti liberation then? It's a temporary thing.
Brahma-jyoti.
When they merge into Brahma-jyoti.
Yes.
The impersonals.
Yes.
They do get liberated, but...
But that's Brahma-bodies. Impersonalists and Brahma-bodies are the same. How we're using the term is, impersonal is the general category. Within that, there are those who are actual impersonalists, who are the Brahma-bodies. And those who are not actual impersonalists, they are the Maya-bodies. Maya-bodies are technically Buddhists. They just use the Vedas to establish their philosophy.
So they don't get liberated
at all? Technically, no. Have we heard of anybody who's actually liberated? That's the thing. We've heard of Brahma bodies who are liberated, but we haven't actually heard of Maya bodies. Because Maya bodies is a philosophy for Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is not actually meant for getting anywhere unless you chant the holy name. So even there, Shankara worked in some places, like in Guru Vayur, he worked in the hall. It's all very devotional, all the things. The deity worship, the kirtans, the elephant procession, all these things. Of all the, you could places, anything connected with Shankara, it's the only place that actually works on devotion. But they're all Maya bodies. But their path is using devotion to get to liberation. So they might temporarily get there because they're using bhakti. Right? But the Maya bodies, they're offensive to the Lord, so why would they get anything? Mm-hmm. The ideas will merge in Brahman, but in reality, they don't even know what Brahman is. How do you merge in something you don't know what it is? Brahma bodies know everything's Brahman, and they're already in Brahman, so there's no need of a separate merge. You're already, everything is Brahman. You're already liberated. Does that make any sense? So in this way, when we say Brahma bodies and then Maya bodies, then we're distinguishing there. If we just say impersonalists, generally we mean Maya bodies. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. And socially, when we say somebody's impersonal, it just means they're insensitive. The Prabhupada points out the reason they're insensitive is because they're a person. And the reason that they have a problem with you and are dealing in a sensitive way is because of their personal issues. And they're dealing with you, who's a person. So there never is technically anything that's impersonal. Right? All it is that impersonal means it's just generic. You know, so when we talk about, yes, you know, like this morning, equality, that's impersonal. Because it's only the generic concept of equality. But what's the application of equality? That's what makes the difference. Vedas have one application, non-Vedic has a different application. So the Vedic actually works. Well, the non-Vedic doesn't work. The more you apply it, the worse it gets. Right? You know what I'm saying? So it's just. So, yeah. You know, it's like, the Russians, then it's all, you know, everybody's all the same, but then somehow or another you have the Kremlin. Right? So not exactly the same.
Everybody else is the same.
Huh?
Everybody else is the same.
Yes, everybody else is the same. You know, so you have something like that, you know, or in France, you know, it's equity. So everyone in France is equal. Then there's everybody outside of France. Yeah, which are all equal on a lower staff level. You know, so...
All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Yes, that's the whole point. Because that's what you get to. In other words, if you want absolute scriptural reference to what happens in the non-Vedic social environments, when you bring up this point of equality, then you just have to refer to the ancient scripture called Animal Farm. You know, that delineates the definitive truth of what happens. Yes, yes. Yes.
So then the difference between the two schools of Brahmavadis and Mayavadis is just the fact that the Brahmavadis, they accept the existence of everything.
That's why they're called Brahmavad. Everything is Brahman. Mayavadis will claim that they're Brahmavadis, but they're called Mayavadis because whatever you see is Maya. Mm-hmm. So how is it Brahman? So that means if everything's Brahman, that means Maya should also be Brahman. So that's how the Brahmavadis see it. Mm-hmm. So the point is the house, the family, the money is all Brahman. But our attachment to it, separate to its existence as Brahman, that's the illusion. Mm-hmm. The illusion is that everything's not Brahman. Mm-hmm. You know? While the Mayavadis claim that's their philosophy, but actually anything that you can think of or conceive of is illusion. So what's left? Nothing. So that's Buddhism. Mm-hmm. So they're just actually Buddhists who establish their philosophy through the Vedas. You know, it's like Upasampradayas. They use the Vedas to establish their nonsense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they use the Veda, but they don't technically follow the Veda. They need to follow the secondary aspects of the Veda, but not the primary. You know, but it's not any better if you follow the primary, but not the secondary. You understand? So like that. So, because if you have philosophy without religion, you have mental speculation. If you have religion without philosophy, it's sentiment. So technically speaking, then Mayavadis are the biggest sentimentalists, because they accept the Vedic culture, but not the actual philosophy. It's always fun when you can just completely turn it around. Or they think that they're the most, you know, but they're the most sentimental. And, you know, or like scientists, they think they're the most objective, but they're the most subjective. You know, it's always, you know, always fun. You just keep talking until it goes around the other way, and then the head kind of, everything kind of. You know.
Yeah, they are.
Because if anybody other than their own particular group or the groups of their interest does anything wrong, they're totally intolerant. You know? That's the thing. Conservatives tend to be tolerant as long as you're not going to make trouble. Mm-hmm. But if you talk, they'll leave it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say you have the police, right? If there's an area town that's just too much trouble, yes. Then they just let it be known that if you stay in here, do all your trouble and don't come out, means as soon as you step out onto this sidewalk, they're going to arrest you. But inside, what do you do? We're not going to bother you. Mm-hmm. So it's a tolerance. Though they have their standards, but they're willing to tolerate someone else's as long as it doesn't bother. Mm-hmm. You know? But the liberal is that you can be sitting in your home and they'll march into your home and feel they have the right to tell you this, that. And yeah, it's kind of, why does this work? You know, so that's what Maya does. Mode of ignorance makes one thing look like the opposite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you think you're being liberal, you're actually being very conservative. You're being basically reactionary conservative. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty.
Religion and mode of ignorance.
Yeah, yeah, and then the reactionary, how you say, the reactionary right. Has a problem with the reactionary left. Yes. Because they're actually the same people. Yeah. Same mentality, just their value system is opposite. But they're actually, that's why they bother each other. Otherwise, your average conservative, average liberal don't bother each other. You know, so like that. So it's just, because the difference is greater. You know what I'm saying? You know, and
the difference is so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The illusion that arises when circumstantial designations make the jiva seem to separately exist, one attains mukti, in which one perceives, as before, the intense bliss of one's true identity as Brahman. But the fun part is, notice the words they're using. One's means an individual. You know, true identity means they're still an individual. Right? As Brahman, and then the intense bliss. So that means the bliss is Ananda, the identity is Sambandha, and the true is the Avideya, Satchit Ananda. So they still have to talk in terms of Satchit Ananda, but technically the philosophy is only supposed to accept Sat. But because they're jivas, they have to talk Chit and Ananda, because they have to have the knowledge, and then by that knowledge you'll gain happiness, bliss. Right? So you can always identify the jiva, even no matter what. It means that the materialist, why are they doing it? They want to be happy. You know? Let's say the what do you call it? What's the fancy term for it? Can't even remember. Term gossip. Some really snazzy term. Whatever, it's the gossip. But the point is why do they want to know? Because of the nature of the jiva in chit, to have knowledge, just that the kind of knowledge they want to know is not that useful. Right? You know, it has its say. And it will give them taste, ananda. So they want to know to be happy. You understand? So it always is there. The jiva shines through. So that's why Vishnu is telling Prithumaras that you should see according to the level of the standard of the jiva. Then you don't get disturbed by the conditioning. Mm-hmm. The conditioning doesn't distract you. I'm saying you work with it. Point is if you can identify your own conditioning and engage in Krishna's service, then why won't you be able to see others' conditioning? So if one takes what's the wrongdoing as the individual, means you yourself are thinking, my conditioning is myself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? If you can see that I'm not the body, I'm this conditioning functions a certain way, I engage it in Krishna's service in that particular way, then it works very nicely. Does that make sense?
And so, Maharaj, we can have this vision to see the soul from the beginning of the spiritual life.
Yes, we can. But so that's why we have the knowledge, but how much we use it, or how much we realize it. So that's the thing, by following the process, we realize, and then we become able to see it more and more. So even if one just has a glimmer here and there, that's good, because at least then that develops that faith that this is correct. Then we, you know, the illusion covers us again. But the point is that it's there, you know, and so it's just a matter of continuing with the cleansing process, the Chaito Dharpana Marjana. You just continue with the chanting, and then it becomes more and more relevant. Right? So, and the most, it means chanting, but hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of Vaishnavas, then that's one of the most important ways to remove, says, all the material, basically to practically nil. It means it's not going to get rid of 100%, because that's going to have to be the commitment to that devotion to Krishna and taking up the mood of the residents of the spiritual world and trying to follow that, that's going to give that. Does that make sense? Because that is there. In other words, you get yourself the liberation by that, but you're only going to get the prema by following. But now if you want to get the liberation quicker, you still follow.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the whole point. That the quickest path to get out of the material world is following in the footsteps of the residents of the spiritual world. And so, by this reasoning, Brahman realization does constitute substantial happiness. In Bhakti, furthermore, according to this view, there is no longer attraction to the false ego, even in its most subtle forms. Indeed, even the very person who once relished false happiness from false ego no longer exists. But then the problem is how do you know, how will you be happy if you're just part of Brahman? And if you're already Brahman, what's the need of going through all this trouble to get there?
Past
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. Thus in mukti, real happiness is known. The happiness that comes from realizing the true identity of the self. The proponents of devotion to the personality of Godhead may believe that when the personal identity of Sri Bhagavan, the embodiment of Satchidananda, is constantly revealed, they can enjoy the most sublime and concentrated bliss, greater than that of liberation. And so they claim that bhakti is greater than mukti. But these beliefs are incorrect. The bliss of Brahman is perfect and complete, right? So this is how the Mayavadis will say it. Because they're going to say it's because they're connected with the embodiment of Satchidananda. And by constantly being there, then they will be involved in that bliss. Because you're contacting the Supreme. So therefore, you're always in contact with the actual source of bliss. Because Brahman is technically not bliss. It is just the qualities of the Lord, the impersonal feature. But that position is Brahman is naturally blissful. Right? Because Brahman is just existing, but the soul is Sat Chit Ananda. So being on that platform of Sat, that will give a certain level of Ananda through the Jiva. So what they don't understand is that technically according to the definition, how is there Ananda in Brahman? Because if there's Ananda, means there's some feeling. There's some experience. That means there's some transformation. Brahman doesn't transform, so therefore it wouldn't be there. So the Brahman, the happiness of Brahman that they're looking for can actually only be tasted in devotional service. Right? What they're tasting is just, there's no problem. Right? Your outside is very hot. You come inside where it's cool. Then you consider that happiness. All it is that the problem's gone away. But the difficulty is this, the more the problem goes away, the less happiness is there. So actually for a Brahmavadi, that's why they come back. And the Mayavadis come back, because there is no taste there. Because the more they become one with Brahman, the less the Ananda can be tasted. Because Ananda is the difference between two things. Right? I mean, there's Sat and Ananda. And they're connected by chit. There's an activity that connects eternity with happiness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in egalitarianism, there can be no pleasure.
Yeah, because everything's equal. Yes. Because once there's no difference between anything, then what's the difference? Yeah. You know, it's just like this. Let us say I brought a variety of foodstuffs and a variety of drinks. But they all tasted exactly the same. The drink tastes the same as the solid stuff, the same. It all tastes the same. It doesn't matter what shape or form it's in. Would that be bliss? You know, it's just like, okay, let us say you have, you know, what to be fair.
Ice cream.
Huh?
Ice cream.
No, I was thinking of money, is that everything costs the same. Right? So you could go out and buy a broom, or you could buy a Ferrari, it'd be the same price. Now in the beginning you think it's great, but after a while it doesn't matter, everybody's got it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sorry?
If the price is low, it's one thing.
Oh, if the broom was expensive and the Ferrari was cheap, then yeah, everybody would be talking about, you know, the broom. You know, that would be the thing, is that you go to the, you know, in Dubai, and you know, in that top penthouse, and you know, in the room, there'd be this special room under lock and key, and inside there would be this broom sitting there.
Gold-plated.
Yeah, gold-plated broom. Yeah, you know, special broom. I guess that kind of broom and broom with this kind of, you get in your Ferrari, broom, broom, broom.
So it's going to be like a Harry Potter broom.
Oh yeah, you could have one of those brooms. Yeah, yeah, that has the advantage that you can travel and sweep. You get both. Right?
You need to eat my dust.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you can sweep it up, and make a pile before you take off, so that. Okay. Such are the views of the impersonalists. And in text 197 through 204, the Bhakti Shastras refute such views. Srimad Bhagavatam and other Bhakti Shastras offer many statements in refutation of the impersonalist outlook. Here are about a few examples, right? So this is important then. We scriptures are always accepted as authoritative. Our words and the words of behavior of great souls is standard evidence in all circumstances. So that should be accepted by everybody, but at least it should be accepted within Bhakti. Like that. So not that, oh, because we're devotees, we don't have, no, it's we're the ones that more accept it. Otherwise, how do you refute all these philosophies?
Just a quick observation. When we say Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it says words and behavior. So behavior means Sadhu, one of the Sadhachar character.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and words means Guru.
I guess.
Okay. Is that how it's done? Our words and the words and behavior, great souls, are so that they are shastra. Our words means shastra. The words of great souls, that's the guru, and the behavior is the sadhu. And so our evidence in all circumstances. Even those who are self-satisfied and unattracted by eternal or external material desires are attracted to the loving service of Sri Krishna, whose qualities are transcendental and whose activities are wonderful. Hari, the personality of Godhead, is called Krishna because he has such transcendentally attractive features. Because Krishna means everything is attracted to him. So whatever it is, what we were saying before, the whole cosmos is attracted to him. Whether we're aware of it or not, that's another thing. But what we're attracted to, we're attracted because it's Krishna.
Yeah. This is the Atmarama.
1710. Oh, okay. The senses, being symbolic representations of the demigods, are naturally inclined to work as directed by the Vedic injunctions. And as the senses represent the demigods, so the mind represents the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. When that service spirit is engaged in the service of the Personality of Godhead without any motive, that devotional service is far better than salvation, siddhi. It's really interesting, because the demigods, they control all the senses. So the senses are actually the external representation of them, because they have the office of, let's say, eyeballs. Right, you know, but you have eyes, so that's actually the representation of the demigods. That potency of sight, then the eye is one aspect that represents it. Does that make sense? Because you have the overall, like you have the company, and then you have somebody who represents the company, like that. So the individual eye that represents the demigod who's in control of it, right? And so just like the Supreme Lord is in control of the demigods, the mind is in control of the senses. So when the mind is connected to the Supreme Lord, that means then everything's perfect. Because the mind is in the position of the Lord controlling the demigods. Right? And so the mind is controlling the senses. So that means if the mind represents the Supreme Lord, it's supposed to do activities, it's supposed to engage the senses in activities according to the Lord. The Lord engages the demigods, the mind engages the senses.
Yes.
Right? So the mind is a representative of the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
So it's supposed to do what the Lord would do.
Yes.
You know, in other words, those things that are appropriate, what's recommended by Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then when that is there, that gives a greater happiness than salvation. Because salvation means you stop engaging the senses. So technically then you're trying to disconnect the mind from the senses. But the point is the mind is also a material element, so if you remove that, then there's no perception of happiness either. So they think basically the mind will remain, the senses will go, and they'll be happy. But notice when the mind and senses that you don't separate are engaged in the Lord's service, it will work. Right? Just like when the demigods are engaged in the Lord's service, they're happy. When Indra does his own thing, it's a problem. When he does what Krishna wants, it works out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then when the senses are connected to the Supreme, then it works.
Yes.
Do we see?
Who's the intelligence of Scripture?
Yeah. It's the cause of why we would do or how to do, or you know, that discrimination to do. It's just like the instruction of the spiritual masters, the favorable winds, you know, that take us across. So that's it. So you taking advantage of the winds, we apply ourselves to the wind. So that means you have the boat going, you're steering it, you're making sure the sail is catching the wind, you know, doing all the things, then the boat goes in the proper direction.
So Maharaj, you said yes, the main duty is to serve.
Yes.
I mean, why it seems that it is always difficult to serve Krishna?
Because then where is we're used to the idea that we will, our enjoyment is going to come from engaging the senses according to our own idea. So then engaging according to Krishna's, it's a matter of, it's basically just we're not accustomed to it. So that the faith is not that strong. Right? Because as in the definition of devotional development from Shraddha to Prema, what's actually maturing at each stage is Shraddha. So in other words, when we become steady in devotional service, it means this, the faith is matured to a particular point. So that sense gratification is not the primary focus. It's about engaging the senses in Lord's service rather than trying to engage them, that by engaging them for sense gratification will make us happy. So when we have that faith that doesn't work, that's when it becomes, that's where the advancement comes in. That's why it then says about detachment. These are symptoms of that aspect. In other words, when the scriptures talk about all these different points, different qualities, they're talking about different aspects of the same thing. So here you can see the symptoms of this. Like this morning, you can see the symptom was forgiveness, because then they are functioning on the platform of the soul. You have knowledge, the symptom will be humility. Right? You know. So then here, then, does that make some sense? Kind of. That's the fun part, is we're studying the same thing over and over again, but because they're doing it from a different angle, to us it seems totally new and like, what is that? You know? So that's why the scriptures have so, it's so simple, the point, but it has unlimited angles that it views it from. In other words, whatever are all the angles that the human being can get distracted by, the Shastra covers. You don't have to, you know, in other words, some aspect that we don't have is not necessary. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's like, let's say, a car mechanic shop does not need a nice vase. Right? Because it's not connected with the car. You know, unless you want to, of course, mount it on the dashboard, you know, then okay, then maybe. Okay, like that. But, you know, I'm not sure. You'd have to get an old car to do that.
One Indian bus.
Oh, yeah, that would work.
The Volkswagen Beetles come with a base.
They come with now.
Yeah, it's starting from like 8 years ago. Whenever they came.
Oh, the new model. They come with it.
Yeah, stick your daisies in.
Really? Wow. Is that just to remind you to drive safely? That, in other words, let the vase hold the daisies, not that you're dealing with the daisies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Don't hold daisies in back. No, you're pushing up daisies. So, okay. No?
Yes.
Okay. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. You said, we got into that last point. We were talking about the mind. Your question was?
It's about serving.
Serving, yes.
Serving,
yeah. Okay. So the mind, its natural position is to serve, because the mind is what controls the senses. What do the senses do? They engage with the sense objects. What's the point of engaging the sense objects? Is sacrifice. So it means the senses are to be engaged in pleasing someone else.
Yes.
and that someone else is Krishna and those connected to Krishna. So in other words, anything connected to Krishna, then that service works. If it's not connected to Krishna, it becomes Maya. Like you see, that guy was reading there those last purports in Kapila Muni's discussions. Because up to that point, generally we hear more about the distractions of family life. Mm-hmm. Right? But at that point, Prabhupada's making these really, really strong statements. Was it there? Maybe it was some, no, I think it was. It was, he was there. But after that point, you see it quite a lot. Is that he's making the point is that, you know, basically you're talking about the man and woman and about the illusions involved. The woman is illusion for the man is illusion for the woman, the children are illusion for the parents for the children. The whole thing is all illusion. And he's not giving any ground on that. It's not. It's just this is the way it is. But then he makes the point that those who understand this and see all this in connection with Krishna, then they're in a different category. Then it becomes very nice. Then the relationship with husband and wife becomes very favorable.
Yes.
Because then it's seen in relationship to Krishna, they're just doing service to Krishna. So then it's not a problem at all.
Yes.
We're not talking, there's no illusion here, there's no anything like that. But if it's not on that platform, then you're dealing with illusion. So that's the thing, is that the natural thing is to serve Krishna and what is connected to him. So Maya means what's that which is not. We think it's not connected to Krishna when it actually is. So therefore the family, the money, the situations are all connected to Krishna, but we're not seeing them connected to Krishna. So that's illusion. As soon as you see them connected to Krishna, then the service in that environment is there. Right? And it cuts out the thing, oh, so then we can just stay at home and take care of them. But what does that mean? What does home mean? What does family mean? If we see them connected to Krishna, it means we're seeing them, not that we saw. We see. It's dynamic. Because the other ones say, oh, okay, it's connected, so now I can just go on. It's just a fact. No, it's a vision. And so because of that, then there's no problem. There's no illusion. So for such devotees, there isn't any illusion. That's why it doesn't matter where they're situated. Because they'll see it all connected to Krishna. So according to one's conditioning, according to one's situation, then you will connect that to Krishna. So if it happens to be family life, you connect that to Krishna. If it's not family, you don't connect it to Krishna. Right? Like, is that
the point in the morning about personal consideration? That
yes.
It's the body and everything connected to it is
yes.
Krishna's.
Yes, yes, yes. So therefore the grihastha means that's the environment they're doing. If someone like Narad Muni, then there is no family and all that. But he doesn't have a problem sitting with grihastha. Most of the stories are him sitting with grihasthas and discussing philosophy and this and that. Because if they're on that same level, it doesn't matter. It's just whatever you're using. Does that make sense? So that's the... You know, that then allows that the unity and diversity. You know, you can have all this but have the diversity, but that takes actually personal philosophy to be able to accommodate. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. So they don't really care what situation they're in. They just serve the Lord. It's a nice situation. It's there. If it's not a nice... You understand? And also, you know, in line with this morning, how do you define hellish? You know what I'm saying? Because one person will consider one situation really nice.
Yes.
You know, some people are in situations that are totally in ignorance and they think it's great.
Yes.
But it's actually hellish. So the heaven and hell is defined by the Vedic condition, by the scriptures. That's how you define. And if you don't see things in connection with the Lord, that's where hell starts.
Is
Right? So basically, when we say heaven and hell, we mean less hellish, more hellish. Like that. So that's the. Yeah, because it mentions, what is it? The Rupa Goswami is mentioning, I think, when he's talking about Krishna's conch shell. When he blows the conch shell, then it says it disrupts the wine parties of the ladies on Patala Loka. Means they're all sitting around, having a wine party, and then they hear the conch and they get all disturbed. So they probably consider this as great.
Yes.
You know. So that's the whole thing is, but the actual experience for the soul is going to be hellish. So the more you purify, then you realize you're in a hellish condition. Right? Without knowledge, we think whatever our birth is great. When we get knowledge, we understand maybe it's not so great. You know, or whatever knowledge we have, we think we're really doing good. But when we find out how much knowledge is there, then we start to understand. Like that. Does that make sense? So you have that. The point is the principle remains. Because even you're there, you can have a wine party and run out of wine. Now that's hell. That makes sense. You know, a room full of drunk ladies with no more wine, that's not going to be good. You understand? So whatever your position, you take it from there of what's hellish and what's not. The point is it's going to work like that. You know, so on Brahmaloka, that's not hellish, but when they look down at the other planets, then they experience that hellish aspect.
Yes. So, when in life we go to some distressful situation of mental anguish or whatever it is, the suffering is actually coming from not seeing that distressful situation in connection with Krishna.
That's the thing. That we're suffering. It doesn't mean that it's a favorable condition. Because the Vedas also describe favorable and unfavorable. You know. They also describe favorable and unfavorable. Mm-hmm. Right? So then you can understand also from there. But are being disturbed by it. That's why it says, not elated in happiness or... What's it in lamentation and distress or unhappiness? I can't remember what exactly. In other words, there was going to be nicer and not nicer situations, and you can perceive that, but it doesn't create that anxiety generated from attachment. You understand? It's a nice situation, so it's good. It's good because if you have an auspicious situation, it just means you have a nice facility to use for Krishna. And if you don't have nice facilities, it's inauspicious, then you make the work to try to make it auspicious to use it for Krishna. But that service to try to make it auspicious, that's the service. Right? Does that make sense? Is that what I'm saying? But if so either way, you don't. But if it's bad, and if it's good, wow. You know, so you just want to be very careful.
Oh, it's just kind of tangential. I was thinking about Krishna's conch. In the 10th canto, that's what he uses in the Sandipani Muni's pastime, when he rescues his son.
Okay.
So he blows the conch, and then he summons Yamaraj immediately. And so that's what that conch signifies, even in Gita, is that Krishna controls Yamaraj, he's the lord of death.
Okay.
And so for the ladies in Patala Loka, it's a reminder of their
of death. Habit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the conch comes from the ocean.
Yeah.
And he's the lord of the demons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It all connects. Connects well.
Yeah.
Okay, my lord's some fortunate souls have gotten relief from the fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar of your pastimes, which you enact when you manifest your personal forms to make known the unfathomable science of itself. Right, so the unfathomable science is, it's unlimited how you're going to know it, but by him performing his pastimes, we can actually know. So that's always the fun part, is that the unknowable can be known. You know, the unlimited is performing a pastime in a particular time and space. You know, so that's the part. So the personal actually makes it the others fathomable. If you don't have the personal, then to understand Brahman and Paramatma, it's impossible. But if you understand Bhagavan, then they are possible, because you only take them as far as necessary. Right? The other one, since that's your goal, then you just keep trying, but it's beyond the soul to be able to accommodate. These rare souls, indifferent even to liberation, renounce the happiness of home and family because of association with devotees, who are like flocks of swans enjoying at the lotus feet, at the lotus of your feet. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.21. So here, renounce, indifferent to liberation, and renounce the happiness of home and family. So karma and jnana, they give up. Right? So they're indifferent to liberation doesn't mean that they're not liberated. Right, and they renounce the happiness of home and family doesn't mean that they're not there. Right, they renounce the happiness because they think that by being in family life that will make me happy. That they renounce. They may perform the duties of. So therefore, as long as it's favorable, they're in family life. As soon as it's not, they're not. But because they're not attached to it, therefore, when they move on, they actually move on. You know, they don't. You don't see them 10 years later with somebody else sitting next to them in a rickshaw. Right? Yeah, so that's the whole thing.
Could you say that you experience more happiness the less attached you are to it?
Yes, yeah. Because then you can use it freely. The more attached, you can't even do anything. You know, it's just like you get something that you consider very valuable and new. You can't even hardly use it. You know, but as soon as that reverence drops a bit, or that attachment, then you can use it and quite comfortably. I can remember once having a chudder that I considered so valuable, I never used it. I think one occasion I pulled it out, and I don't know, I can only remember wearing it one evening. Like that. I don't even know what happened to it. I think after a while I gave it to somebody because I never used it.
It's like the Ferrari that's locked up in the garage.
Yeah. Or there's guys that have it on their, you know, in one of the rooms on their penthouse suite. How do you drive it up? Maybe put it, you know, how do you say it? Like a video screen or something like that. So,
the treadmill.
Charge the batteries for the house, you know, the UPS. Yeah. Like that. Okay, who are like flocks of swans enjoying the lotus of your feet. So they're always absorbed, they always entangle themselves. So enjoying is why the swans with lotuses, it's not that they just hang around and look at it, they actually entangle themselves in the lotus. They find that fun. You know? Because they have a long neck, so they get it stuck in, they stick it into the lotuses. And then they, I guess, whatever it is, that's one of the things swans do. Indeed, even liberation is insignificant for those whose minds are attached to the loving service of Lord Marudvit. What's Dvit? That's be the killer or something. You know? Marudvit.
Dvit is knowledge.
Knowledge.
But I'm not sure what that is. Probably that killer.
Yeah, or something, or the control of something. So Srimad Bhagavatam 5.14.44. So he's pointing out that these are scriptural points that are being made. So that's why they're pointing them out, because the other ones are using scripture that just supports what they have. Because you have to, we have to remember is that these Vedic philosophies are actually, you know, Vedic philosophies. But the problem is they're not complete. And why aren't they complete? Because they only accept certain verses of the Veda that supports. For us, any verse will support our philosophy. Right? But for the others, only certain ones will. That's why they shy away from others. I heard the other day someone brought up something, and then the one scholar brought up about a point and brought up an area that would defeat what he's saying, but it's not in the area he generally talks from. It's in a different area, and then he just said, "I don't know anything about that area." And so then basically that means you can't use that evidence. You know, so fun. Yes.
In all the verses, it is only Srimad Bhagavatam.
Because it's giving the essence. Now, where that's from in the Veda, then those who know the Veda will know where those verses are. Because those points are made. Just they'll use different words. That's the point. That's the nice thing of the Bhagavatam, is that it gives the direct, obvious meaning. While in the Veda, they'll use a lot of this lakshana. There was what was that word? We had Abhida Shakti and Lakshana. Was it Lakshana Shakti? Yeah. They'll use that a lot. The poetic, because it gives rise to, you can through the poetic, someone who knows the philosophy, it's a very nice way of saying it. And someone who doesn't, then it gives rise to all kinds of it allows them the scope to follow the Vedas, but technically not be following the Vedas for what the Vedas are for. You know? So that's not good, but it's better than not following at all. Right? It means that, let's say the Smarta is following all the rules nicely because he wants to go to the heavenly planets. But because of that, then the devotees who are following, they won't bother them. And that facility will be there. Does that make sense? You know, just like now it's harder, but when we first came to India, anything in the way of, let's say, cloth and pooch, any of the facilities that we require within devotional service was readily available anywhere. In great varieties and good quality. You know, way better quality than what you can get nowadays. But as people are less and less interested in the Vedic, it's harder to get these things. Some things you can't even get anymore. And other things that are left, the quality is not very great. You understand? So that's the advantage, is that that means before they were following blindly or following sentimentally, but at least they were following. So the form that is useful in Krishna's service was there. But as they give up the Vedic, you know, heritage, then those things aren't there anymore because no one buys them. Does that make sense? So, you know, shops before that were considered high-grade shops now are just little dinky things out of the way that nobody goes to. You know what I'm saying? Like before, it was like you had these shops, they had these, it's called Sarbat, you know, it's like it's rock candy and these different oils, essential oils. So technically, in the Ayurveda, these are medicines. You know, specifically they're designed for the heat. So different ways to cool, like kus oil and this, you get that flavor, rose, or the different things and different ways they put it together. But they're actually technically all Ayurvedic. It's not understood because it's cooling. Rock candy is cooling. Sugar is heating, that's why it gives you boils and rashes and itchy and all that kind of stuff. But rock candy is cooling. It does the opposite. It's good for the system. So then it was a medicine. And so that was kind of like the high-class drink shops. Right? And the little shops that sold, you know, these soft drinks, they were just the little guys, you know, that sat under the panwala and stuff. The panwala's on top, the drink guy's on the bottom. Right? And then with time, the drink guy's on top, the panwala's on the bottom. And then with time, those shops, those were the high-class shops. Now those are just ordinary, hardly anybody goes to them. And now everybody goes to the shops that sells all the drinks. And now they're big, fancy places. You know, is that... So that's the thing. So that's the whole advantage in the Vedic system, that it accommodates a wide range because they follow the culture. So then it makes the facilities to be used in Krishna's service available. So these authoritative statements of the Bhagavatam and other Bhakti Shastras are supported by thousands and thousands of recorded statements by great saint persons. So that's what the Goswamis did, is they went through and pulled those scriptural evidences. So then they had them in their various works, and then they can just speak directly here and make it very clear. Vaishnavas like Sri Narada, Prahlad, and Hanuman have expressed themselves eloquently on this topic. For example, in Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1249, Sri Rupa Goswami refers to this well-known statement by Hanuman. Quote, "Even though liberation destroys the bondage of material existence, I have no desire for liberation, in which I would forget that you are the master and I am your servant." Mm-hmm. You know, so this goes way back before there were any Mayavadis. So. Recent authorities have spoken the same way. For example, the Paramahamsa Sri Shankaracharya Bhagavat Pad, the all-knowing commentator on the important Shrutis, has said in his commentary on Nisringa Tapani Upanishad 2.4, "Mukta api lilaya vigraham krit va Bhagavan Tam Bhajanti." Quote, "For pastimes, even those who are liberated persons accept new bodies to worship the Supreme Lord." End quote. This accords with the Vedanta Sutra 1.3.2, which says that Brahman is, quote, "approached for shelter by persons who are liberated." Mukto paspritya vyapya deshat. Sri Sukadev Goswami, the four Kumaras, and others like them were attracted to narrations of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prahlad, Hanuman, and others refused to accept moksha even from the Lord himself, because he offered them benediction and they would never accept liberation. And so that's the idea, is that there's no interest for such devotees. So see, we see the difference in the quotations. Right? The when you deal with Vedanta and all these others, then you have to kind of know what you're talking about to be able to understand it. While the Bhagavatam is very direct, so that's the important. But it's based on there. So it being a scripture, but in case someone is worried about it, you can take it back to Vedanta Sutra and back to the Veda itself, or reference it from other known Puranas or itihasas, like, you know, Ramayana. Is that what it says? So it can be done. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur in that, Mahaprabhu Siksha. Yeah. I think there everything is from Upanishads. Yeah. All the evidence is all from Upanishads, just so to show that it, mm-hmm. it works. This evidence from scripture and the words and behavior of saintly persons is authoritative in all circumstances, sarvata, and at all times, sada. It should never be dismissed as what in the Vedic terms is called artavad, mere sectarian verve. Because we try, so the sectarian verve, oh, that's just Indian, or that's just from that time, or that, you understand, that's sectarian. Right? And who says these things? So-called liberals. Isn't it fun? So that's the So that survives all times, places, circumstances, right? So it all it always fits. Then you just have to see. So then the point is sarvatra, the circumstance. That's actually the part connected with us, right? Because the place and the time. that's kind of what's going on. Now, what's the variable there is us, the circumstance. So that means in all circumstances, means all conditions connecting to us and all applications connecting to us, we can apply it connected to the Lord. So this idea is that, oh, you can't connect it to the Lord.
Yes.
It doesn't exist.
Yes.
The circumstance, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The statements of the Bhakti Shastras like Srimad Bhagavatam and of great devotees like Narada, Hanuman, and Sukadeva need no authentication from other evidence. They are always perfect. So that's the point, is that they're always perfect. We don't have to authenticate.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're there. But if you need to, then it can be done. But the problem is if you can't accept it in its natural form, why would you accept it in its more intellectual form?
Yes.
You know? That's the thing. It becomes even more. You have to be. In other words, if you can't accept it due to spiritual qualification, then how are we going to accept it by material qualification? Because we don't have the material qualification to understand spiritual. So it's only by the grace of bhakti that we can understand in the first place. So what happens is we say, no, by my intelligence I can understand. No, it's by Krishna's grace. We use our intelligence, but it's by Krishna's grace that we understand. Does that make sense? 198. And many historical accounts support these statements we have made. To presume, therefore, that our words are merely overstated praise is certainly unreasonable. We also have to remember that these are the bhakti shastras speaking themselves. That's documented in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the personified Vedas are speaking. Right? And so then we would have to, you know, in all reality, accept that what they're saying is authoritative.
Not biased.
Yeah. That devotional service is vastly superior to mere liberation is not an idea one should dismiss as artavad, exaggeration. It's interesting, artavad, because arta means to expand it. Right? You know, so you've taken it and just expanded it and made it bigger than what it is. So I mean that's business, right? You take something and make it bigger than what it is. Right? So, yeah. So then you could say businessmen are proper artivadis, appropriately applied, right? For it has been factually established by ancient histories, recorded in the Puranas and other scriptures. The consensus indicated by thousands of accounts from varied sources is too strong to disregard. And here, when they're saying thousands, they're not exaggerating. They're not just, you know, saying, like we say, oh, yeah, everybody knows that. Oh, millions. You know, no. This is, they mean thousands. Like that. One such account concerns a Brahmana resident of Dwarka whose sons had all died at birth. Unaware that in fact they had been taken away by Lord Mahavishnu to the abode of liberation, the Brahmana complained to King Ugrasena, and Arjuna offered to protect the son born next. But in spite of Arjuna's utmost efforts, that infant mysteriously disappeared soon after birth. Bitterly reviled by the Brahmana for his failure, Arjuna was about to kill himself in shame, but Krishna brought him to the abode of liberation where he found the sons, whom that they then brought to Dwarka, the abode of devotional service. Right, so that's the abode of liberation. So the Lord is living there with his devotees. But it's the platform of liberation. So this is where those who get liberated go.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, they actually technically don't get outside the Mahatattva.
Yes.
You know, we always put it just in between the spiritual world and material world. That's Brahma Jyoti, but the part that they get to function in is the part within, inside. They don't get out. You don't want to let people out. If they do get out, that's why around Goloka they have all those tridents, just in case one does get out. In another incident, the three sages, Ekta, Dvita, and Trita. It's like the cats, Udu Twa. Okay. Went to Svetadvip and made a great effort to achieve darshan of the personality of Godhead. But even though they were fixed in a level of Brahman realization, virtually equal to that of the four Kumaras, they were unable to see the Lord. They were qualified for mukti, but not bhakti. Right? Because why were the Kumaras successful? And what is it? I'll just say, Udu Twa, right? We're not. Ekta, Dvita, and Trita. Oh no, it's not Ekta, Ekata. 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 In North India, they'd be Ekat, Dvit, and Trit. In Hindi, they don't say the A's at the end. Because they simply went to see the Lord, but they hadn't heard from devotees. Right? Well, the four Kumaras have heard from Lord Brahma about the glory of the Lord and his position as the supreme and the source of everything. So they were situated on the Brahman platform, so they wanted to go see the source of Brahman. So out of that faith in Brahma's words, they went to see that supreme person. Therefore, by the grace of Brahma, then they were able to see. While these others, then simply based on their qualification in Brahman realization, they thought they would see, but he's beyond. The fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes how Lord Vishnu visited King Prithu, the incarnation of the Lord's power of rulership. When the Lord urged the king to choose the best benediction, Prithumars extolled the Lord with excellent prayers and then said, "My Lord, due to your illusory energy, all living beings in the material world have forgotten their real constitutional position. And out of ignorance, they always desire the material happiness of society, friendship, and love. Therefore, please do not ask me to take some material benefits from you. Rather, as a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think best." That's a clever one. But, you know, because the father's always taking care of the son. Even the son doesn't ask for it. He doesn't know what to ask for. It's like he takes care of, you know, except for lollies or something. He, you know, to take care of everything. Right? So in the same way as that the Lord knows what's best, and he is the father who takes care, then he bestows upon whatever he feels is the best thing. Okay. The narration continues. After hearing Prithumars' prayer, the Lord, the seer of the universe, said to the king, "My dear king, you may always be blessed by engaging in my devotional service. As you yourself very intelligently express, only by such purity of purpose can one cross over the insurmountable illusory energy of Maya." Srimad Bhagavatam 4:20, 31-32. So then, the blessing that he gave was that he may be always always have that purity of purpose, that he is always engaged in devotional service. Because that's how you cross over, right? So you cross over the material ocean, the illusory energy of Maya, means you also cross over the illusory concept that Brahman is a good place to be. Right? And come to the devotional platform. So then, he's saying, you give whatever you think is the best as the Supreme, since he's taking care. And so this is what Krishna says is the best. Right? The one's always engaged in devotional service.
When it says the purity of purpose, does it refer to the attitude? It mentions here that only by such a purity of purpose can one cross over the insurmountable illusion of the energy of Maya. So that, does it refer to the attitude that one has?
The attitude, yes. Because that's what makes devotional service. It's not the technique. It's just like, that's what the thing is, that the Vedic technique is one. But your attitude, there's three: karma, jnana, bhakti. Right? In other words, the process of elevation is the same for everybody. right? Does that make sense? The austerity, charity, sacrifice, you know, the performance of duties, the mode of goodness without attachment to results. You require that for any of these, right?
Yeah.
So the process is the same. It's just what you're going to do with it. Just like, let's say, an extreme example. In, I don't know about now, but before in South India, you have these music gurukuls, where musicians go to learn music. So when we're up in the Brahma Muhurta and we're chanting japa, they're playing music. There's no question that they won't. I think it was one time, I think it was Nikhil Banerjee, North, at the same principle. Then he got up late. I think he got up at like 7 or something. And then his teacher. As soon as he woke up, he just handed him a train ticket, and said, "Leave." He says, "Why?" He says, "Because you were not practicing." And so he explained that he was practicing so late into the night that he went to bed very, very late. So whatever lesson he gave him, he was already practicing in the evening, but he just kept going all the way practically the morning and then fell asleep. And then it was okay. But the point is that it's the same system. You want to become good at anything, you have to do it at that time. But the point is, the sense, that's the best time to become good at anything, then why not become good at the best thing at that time? And that's devotional service. You understand? So the system's the same. Doesn't matter what aspect of the Vedic process you're involved in, it's always the same. But it applies, to the particular individual and this and that. But the principles are all the same. You have to have guru, it has to be based on shastra, there must be a sadhana that's followed. You have to follow that with faith. You have to be regular in it. There's no difference. Right? Yeah. So does that make sense? So the attitude is what makes it bhakti. That the attraction is to Krishna rather than to enjoy the facility that's generated from one's actions. Right? Or the enjoy the lack of facility generated from one's inactions. Okay, 199. If a theorizer acts with such a presumption, nonetheless, it will fill him with atheistic delusions and cast him into hells, one after another, from which he will not be able to escape. A theorizer. If one refuses to take seriously the words and behavior of elevated persons, and one acts as if the glories of devotional service were mere exaggerations, he will become an atheist. So that's why we have to be very, very careful. You can't throw out the Vedas, can't throw out the, as it mentions, what was it? Something verb? Sectarian verb. Yes. This whole idea is that, oh, these things are just Indian, or they're just Hindu, or those don't apply to us, those are only for the karmis. One can't pursue this strongly, otherwise it will generate atheism. Because you're rejecting the very thing that Krishna says. He is the Shastra. Right? And he is known by the Shastra. This is what Devahuti is pointing out, is that he is unlimited, he's unknowable. But he subjects himself to be known through the Veda. So that's his arrangement. He can be known through the Veda. So if we reject the Veda, how are we going to know the Lord? And why would we reject the Veda? Because the Veda comes from the Lord. Okay. So that's the So one has to be very, very careful about these things. Mm-hmm. Right? There may be shastras we don't deal with, but it's not that they themselves are bogus, or you know, like the Tamasic Puranas, we don't deal with them much. But it's not that they're bogus. It's just they're written in such a language that for those who want to come up with other conclusions other than Vishnu Supreme, it's easier for them. Right? You just kind of you say it in such a way that it doesn't say Vishnu Supreme, but it leaves the opening that you could think that Shiva is Supreme. Is that your sense? It's just a way of writing. So anything does the authorized scriptures, then we accept. Now that's why it said don't read too many scriptures, because you only read those ones that you're willing to follow and accept. Right? So that's why the prophet, he gives his books, read those. If you go beyond, then there's recommendations how to go beyond. The prophet mentions, like we said, Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Jiva Dharma. You read those, you're never going to get the wrong understanding. But devotees read Krishna Sandarbha, get really weird understandings. Because he's written it for a very specific audience, and if you're not that audience, it doesn't make any sense. So that's the thing, it's recommended. Then what is there, how to approach. The acharyas have already gone through, the commentaries are there. So we only approach the Veda through the commentaries of the acharyas, like Sridhar Swami, he's written commentaries on the Veda, Madhvacharya like this, then we can understand the Veda. Then our acharyas, they give the most important ones, the ones from the Upanishads and that show the position of devotional service. He will lose faith in the authority of the Vedic Shastras, become more and more proud of his own scholarship, and concoct theories about Artavad that will earn him hellish punishments from which he will no longer be unable to escape. Right? So, this is your materialist or your impersonalist, they do that, then this is what will happen to them. Mm-hmm. Devotees do this, it will create hellish situations for them. Mm-hmm. You understand? But they won't go to hell. It means unless they completely reject Guru Sadhana Shastra, then that's another thing. But if they don't do that, where their bhakti sukriti is lost, then they'll have Krishna will correct them. But it's not that the correction will necessarily be pleasant. Because right? The mentality's not good. You know, it's not like there's a pleasant way of dealing with a boil. You know, boils are boils, they hurt. Yeah, you understand? So it's just to remove something, then it's going to be. That's why better we have the proper attitude. Then these things can go be removed so much easier. Okay? Like that. You know, in other words, if we're willing, then they go away quite easy. We don't even know. Just a nice kirtan and somebody go away. Mangal arti and somebody go away. You know what I'm saying? With that.
Without proper guidance, we can be very easily lost in different way.
Yes. Yeah. But that's the problem. Because it's the living entity by nature needs variety.
Yes.
That's what taste is. So then 8,400,000 varieties are there. And then within each one of those, there's variety. You know? So like that, that's how much we can get distracted. That's why it says razor's edge. One has to be very careful. There's a razor's edge, and you try to stick to that exactly. So one has to have faith in that razor's edge. One may not be on the razor's edge, but one has to have faith in it. That's why this point is you can't reject these, you can't be a theorizer. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then the theorizer become more and more proud of their own theories. And then they'll be distracted. So one has to have faith that, no, this is the correct thing. I may not be qualified. Mm-hmm. Right? But, at least four, because there's this point that's being made, it's Apichet Sudaracharo. We generally take it to mean really extreme. But basically, mixed devotional service is already abominable. Right? We're acting out of attachments and all kinds of things like that. But the point is if one has faith in the instruction of the spiritual master, one is rightly situated. And one will be good. So, but one needs to understand that this is not good. You know, that was the point this morning. If you understand that the attachments we have in material life are not good, then you can work with them. Doesn't mean you won't continue in that area. And we even see if someone gives up the attachment in that area because that's their conditioning, or I'm not conditioning, that's their nature, Krishna generally continues to engage them that way. Right? Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom, but then gave that up. But then how is he engaged? As a king. Right? Arjuna, he you know, falsely gives it up, but then when he actually gives it, then how is he engaged? As a warrior. Right? So, does that mean? So that's the thing, is that it still functions very nicely that way. One doesn't have to go outside of the area of one's natural values. You just have to know what is of value within your values. You know, what is it you value within what you call your values? You know, is it, okay, let's say money. Why do you value money? You know, what does it do? Like that. You just like paper? You know, like... Gold, yeah, okay. Stacks of gold, okay. Yeah, paper doesn't quite feel the same when you pour it over your head, like gold coins and that. You know, you feel something. You know, and they tend to just drop and fall on the floor. Well, if it's jewels, then they tend to bounce across the floor and go underneath things. They're hard to catch, right? So therefore, the best is gold coins. Yes. Swimming in gold coins.
Yeah.
Oh, swimming in gold.
If you're a cartoon.
Okay. His pool is filled with gold coins.
Yeah, big like tower.
And so he just. Okay.
He spit a fountain full of coins out and came up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, where is this guy nowadays? Where is he when you need him? So much of the case for the hand, right? Okay. As the Narada Purana warns, quote, O best of Brahmanas, the Puranas authoritatively teach all aspects of religious life. Those who say that these Puranic teachings are mere artavad are sure to suffer in hell. Right? Because that's one of the things, it's merely exaggeration. So we see here is there's a finer point being made of exaggeration. When we say that the Vedas always apply, and then we say, oh, they don't apply to this time, place, and circumstance, that's that offense to the holy name. Right, because we're thinking that you know what's this exaggeration on the glories of the holy name, but they say that it's going to always be applied. You know, in all times, all places, all circumstances. But we're saying no, we have to do something else. So that's actually this. That's actually artava. Right? What's that? That's the. I think that's the sixth defense. Yeah. To consider the glorious holy name is exaggerated. Yeah. Okay. So they're all there, but the thing is we don't know how to apply. We apply them in a particular way, in a particular gross way, which is fine, right, for our understanding. But then as we go mature, then we get a finer and finer understanding. Such statements are meant to tell proud logicians they must give up their groundless, arrogant theories and accept that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is even greater than liberation. Speculators who refuse will fall into the punishments of hell. The philosophy they should accept has been set forth above in text 178 through 181. So that's previously, 178 to 181. page 78. Okay, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Brahman, the Supersoul, the absolute controller of everything. His body is the concentrated essence of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He is an ocean of superlative qualities. Contrary natures, like having qualities and having no qualities, co-join in him. Since impersonal Brahman is an infinite opulence of the personality of Godhead, the difference between him and Brahman is well established. His two beautiful lotus feet therefore embody the concentrated essence of happiness. Those who realize him through pure devotion surely attain that intense bliss. The 2 feet of Sri Krishna are considered like pieces of sugar because they are joyful and are a source of all joy. Brahman, however, is only joyful. Right? So there's a difference between joyful and source of joy. So therefore, Brahmananda is only the joyfulness itself, and not the source of where that is coming from. Because it's the nature of the soul to appreciate that they're coming from somewhere.
The point that's made in this purport is that if there's a source and something, then that implies duality. Brahman can have no duality, so it can't be the source of something else.
Yes. Makes sense. Because if Brahman is one, then it can only be happiness. It can't be the source of happiness. So that's Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun. That's the thing. Krishna is just all these contradictory elements. They perfectly are, reside in him. Because being the source of everything, then he's there. So he's a resource of Brahman, where you don't have that, but he himself is also, has all that. So that's why the personal is so much more fun. To attain liberation by the practices set forth in the Vedic scriptures may take many lifetimes. Most so-called transcendentalists who aim at liberation encounter nothing but frustration. Therefore, one should understand the endeavor for impersonal liberation to be fruitless and put it aside. 200. Indeed, how can the scriptures glorify liberation, which outright demons are seen to achieve? Demons, those same scriptures condemn, killers even of cows and brahmanas. Right? They get to the Brahman platform. Because you see these big demons, and they kill anything, these guys. But when they're liberated, when they're killed by the Lord, they get liberation. So it must not be that great if, you know what I'm saying? If that's what you give to demons, so that's the point being made here. Right? They get that. And so that's just the existence of the Lord. It's not the personal interaction. That's where the real happiness is. So, yes, it's a happiness, but that's because they've contacted the Lord. But it's not the ultimate happiness, because that's in connection with the Lord himself as a person. Yes?
Do they have an opportunity to upgrade?
Upgrade.
Or is it like, nope, you're liberated.
No, for the demons, they have an opportunity to upgrade. For the impersonalists, no. Because the demons, they've contacted the Lord. They were killed by the Lord.
Right.
So now, in that purified state, liberated state, they won't have any conditioning. So now, if they think upon the Lord, then they can consider, they can appreciate that greater sense of happiness and be attracted by the Lord. So then for Brahman, then they could go into Vaikuntha. But if they don't, then they will, when they want to be happy, they'll think of material activities and come back here. But it's not recommended as a process of devotional service to try to become the biggest demon, in the universe so that the Lord personally will come and kill you. You can't guarantee that, because generally Maya just takes care of everybody. Mahesh Asura never get farther than that. So it's not recommended. But the impersonalist then they would have to come in contact with the devotees of the Lord to then move forward. But from their position of Brahman, they wouldn't move forward because they don't see any differentiation.
Yeah, I was making this point once in a class, and someone asked me, how would they get an association of a devotee from Brahman Jyoti? And I said, sometimes Narada Muni comes through. Right?
So this would be before they go to the Brahman Jyoti, okay. Before Kumaras. Their Sukadeva Goswami. If they're already just floating in Brahman, no, they'll come back and have a body, then they'll get association. From there, they're not going to go. Only those who are killed by the Lord, they could go from that position.
Right.
But they'll only go to Vaikuntha.
Uh-huh. But I'm saying, so they get killed by the Lord, they go to Brahman Jyoti. Where would they get the association so they can go to Vaikuntha?
They already had the association.
They had.
I'm talking about the demons. They had it. The other impersonalists haven't had it. That's why they're in the Brahman. So they'll have to come back to get it.
I see.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
We also... Yeah. Okay. Here's another easily understood argument. Since we see from scriptural histories that demons like Kamsa and Agasura achieve liberation, persons of the opposite nature should not aspire for it. Those with the divine nature should not. Even scriptures that promote liberation condemn demons who kill cows and Brahmins and who blaspheme the Vedas and Vedic sacrifices, because they'll just upset everybody else. Right? That's the whole problem. They'll disturb others. They'll disturb the environments in which others can be Krishna conscious, or create un-Krishna conscious environments where people will become influenced. Right? The general people, like it mentions in the Manu, that this concept of Niyoga, you know, that you use in the other ages, where the brother of the husband can approach the wife if the husband dies. Right? But the Manu mentions that all these kind of things started when Venu was king. So because he didn't have the proper understanding, these things started. So it's not your ideal situation. That's why even the Manu calls it, you know, kind of strange. But it has its rules and regulations and all that. So it's introduced through that situation. So there's many aspects of the Dharma that's introduced through various situations, because in the very beginning, in the first day of Brahma, the equality of souls are so great that many of the restrictions aren't necessary. But as time goes, they become less qualified, so then these rules get established. But then this one comes in through someone like Vena. Like that. Does that make sense? So they have their different ways that they come in.
Another is when Parashuram killed all the Kshatriya dynasty, and then Kshatriya women had to reproduce with Brahmin men.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it means it's used. So it's part of the Vedic system.
Yeah.
It only becomes introduced at a certain time, and it's not necessarily it's a glorious thing.
Yeah.
But it's something that's used.
Because
otherwise, if it's glorious, people would misuse it. So if it's not, then they'll be a little careful about it. In other words, if nothing else is working, it's an alternative. But it wouldn't be your first choice. Otherwise, I say, Duryodhana and his wife would be having a good time, right? There's 100 brothers. You know, so that's why these things are restricted. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.440 portrays this demoniac mentality in the advice of King Kamsa's ministers. O King, we, your adherents, in all respects shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmanas, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk, which give clarified butter for sacrifice. Right? So the demoniac mentality is get rid of the cows. Right? Because then you know, there's no need, because you need clarified butter for sacrifice. So Yeah. So the sacrifice itself, those who are performing the sacrifice, you know, you get rid of all this, and then, you know, then you can be do whatever you like. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole idea, is that get rid of the Vedic authority of the scriptures, then you can do whatever you like. Because otherwise, if it says, oh, all this stuff's Indian, then what's left? Then it's left, well, you know, if we don't follow it, then we follow whatever one we like. So does that make sense? Demons perform many such atrocities. Therefore, the destination they attain, all they attain, should also be considered abominable. So, if they attain Brahman, then you can understand it's not good. You know, it's like being the ultimate state of boredom. You know, you thought sitting in the corner being grounded was bad. Here's the idea. There's no body. There's nothing around you. There's nothing. There's just light. Mm-hmm. 2.1. Saints and demons are in all respects opposite in nature. It is therefore only fitting that they be opposite in their disciplines and goals. So in other words, he's basically saying the impersonalists are demons. Because they're not accepting the personality of Godhead, so, and they're rejecting. The main thing is here is they're rejecting the authority of the scriptures, that bhakti is the highest. So that's in this case is what puts them in the demoniac position.
So if in this Kali Yuga, the saintly qualities and the demoniac quality are in the same person.
Yeah.
It's quite normal that you have many problems.
Yeah, so that's why the chanting will remove all that. Yeah. So that's why we study this nicely, so we can decide. You know, who just said that? Jekyll or Hyde? Yeah. So I like that. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do, is discern these little fine points and remove these.
This means in other ages, the principle of authority was more accepted.
Yes, yes. Kali. Therefore, only these really, really, you know, obvious demons acted against the Vedic system.
Yes.
Like that. But nowadays, you see, anybody can be acting. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we study, so that we know why it's there, and we avoid these things. Otherwise, we wouldn't consider them very strong. Like in Manu gives, I forget, I think you have the five main sins,
mm-hmm.
right? The biggest are the mahapaps. They're the worst of all sins, right? The modern wouldn't necessarily consider them the worst, but the worst of all sins. So killing a Brahmin,
yes.
stealing a Brahmin's gold, mm-hmm. Sleeping with his wife, and intoxication. So reviling the Veda is considered an aspect of intoxication. So it's considered a mahapap. When you don't accept the Veda, it's considered in that category. And the fifth one is associating with those people who do these other four. Okay. In personal character and behavior, devotees of the Supreme Lord completely differ from his enemies. And so the goal of their lives and the disciplines they practice to achieve that goal are also completely different. Devotees practice worshipping the personality of Godhead, meditating on his lotus feet. And demons practice just the opposite. They cultivate the understanding that their own self is one with the Supreme. The goal of the devotees is prema bhakti, the goal of the demons, mukti. Because right, they'll always try to get to that position. Does that make sense? They'll always try to get to that position. Well, one can be into sense gratification because he doesn't see everything in connection with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, as we see, is the material happening, even karma. What is karma? Trying to remove material pain. Mm-hmm. It's just whether you're doing them one at a time as they come up, or you try to do them all at once.
Yeah.
So liberation is all at once, and karma is one at a time.
Yeah.
So technically, everybody's an impersonalist.
Right.
You know? So that's the atheistic nature. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So that clock wasn't there before. Was it there before?
No, just.
Yeah, I was sitting there and I looked across. And there used to be a clock there, and then there wasn't, and now there is. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chanditai Gaurav Vinodini.